The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.
And now, it's time for Radio Jobline with your host, Scott Possessor, right here on 103.9 LI News Radio.
Everybody, it must be Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock, because we're here for you every week to help you get a job, help you keep your job, help you succeed in your job. We talk about every workplace issue imaginable on this show. We've been doing it for 5 years here on LI News Radio, and our job is to help you. That's what we want to do. And today we have a staffing expert that's going to be joining us and telling us all about how you can benefit from using a staffing service, what you shouldn't do, what you should do. But I'm also going to probe our guest and find out some cool job hunting techniques that he uses to do his staffing thing. So I think that's a great topic for our listeners. And before we start the show today, I have some comedy for you folks. I don't know if you're going to consider this comedy or tragedy. This past Wednesday, I was heading to the radio studio here at MacArthur Airport when I encountered a traffic jam on the Long Island Expressway. And I'm heading east on the expressway, and it's moving so slowly that I start worrying if I'm actually going to make it to the studio in time. So I put on CBS radio, and suddenly I hear that there's an accident, a pretty severe accident, on the expressway headed west. So I figure, well, that's okay. I'm going east. The accident's west, so I shouldn't have any problem. So I kept heading east. Then I find out, and it's not till too late, I was already after my taping time, that the accident was not, in fact, on the expressway. It was on North Ocean Avenue. And when I got off the parkway after an hour and 30-minute ride to go 8 miles, I get off the parkway, and they detour me, of course. So the first block, if you're familiar with North Ocean Avenue off the expressway, you're going south. The first block you come to, everybody was forced to get off there. There was cops at every street, and there was nobody going south on North Ocean Avenue. So I'm on this access road with 1,000 people. I'm looking at my watch. I'm an hour and 20 minutes late, and I had no way. My GPS is going, turn right, and it was sending me back to North Ocean Avenue, which have done nothing for me. So joining me is Rob Shamowitz. Rob is a staffing expert, specializes in sales, collections, multiple different areas, been in the business a very long time. And Rob was following the caravan of people headed to the radio station that night. Rob, give us your side of that story.
That I was. I'm glad I went with my Google Maps as a little shout out to Google, because I got here a lot quicker than Scott did, and I actually made it here. Unfortunately, Scott didn't.
Scott did not make it
Scott
here.
Did
Let's
not.
Just be clear.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
Look, Long Island is brutal. We all know this, and one traffic accident just causes a real pain in the you know what for many people. So you experienced that on Wednesday night, and we're here to take two on this show.
We're going to definitely try a take two, and we can't do worse than we did last time. I didn't make it at all. Actually, we dropped a guest too along the way.
We did. We lost somebody.
He lost his enthusiasm. You know, after this 2-hour disaster debacle. So anyway, we're back. There is no traffic jam today. We wish everybody a happy new year. I hope you enjoyed our comedy specials that we had on the last couple of weeks while I was on vacation. Also, I was out with a pretty bad cold, so sorry about that, too, if I sound hoarse. It's the remainder of what's left of a cold. I understand it's affected over 100,000 Long Islanders. If you're sitting and sneezing and coughing as you listen to the show, believe me, I'm with you. I can relate. There was a really virulent cold going around Long Island. So if you haven't gotten it, don't touch anybody. Say nothing to anybody. Don't shake hands. Don't go anywhere.
Scott, I was on the Long Island Railroad going to the Knicks game, taking my son last Sunday, and the train was pretty crowded.
Mm-hmm.
Scott, it was like a scene. It was a skit from Saturday Night Live. Every single person on the train was coughing, sneezing.
Right.
The entire trip. I mean, the entire, everybody's sick.
It's funny, Rob. You know, you see all this news about Trump and this and that. Well, I think this is a news story. I think when 100,000 Long Islanders are stricken with a flu-like cold, that it should be news.
Yeah, I agree.
And that we should be, what can we do about it? My doctor's office said, don't come in. That was their attitude.
Wow.
Don't come in. You, I can't do anything for you. And, you know, you're just going to make everybody here sick. So, and he didn't want to get sick, you know, the doctor, because then he can't make any money either. So
it's just
been a disaster. So I hope everybody's feeling good out there and looking forward to a great 2019. And now we're going to turn our attention to staffing. And I could have picked anybody to be on the show. Rob is a friend, but he's also a great staffing guy. And he really knows the ins and outs of staffing, as you guys know, I do as well. So Rob and I are going to share with you today what we know about what you should do from a job hunting standpoint, from the mindset of a staffing guy. So Rob, what is, first of all, how do staffing companies get their companies to give them business? You know, because it's not unlike what a candidate would have to do to get a company interested in it.
Sure. Well, first off, you got to have the reputation and the experience. But look, there are numerous ways, Scott. The ability to really find them and identify the talent that they're looking for is key. Mm-hmm. So, you know, remember, they're paying us a fee, and they're not just looking for anybody. They're looking for the exact experience and caliber of candidates that they need. Mm. So that's why they come to us.
Right.
When candidates need to realize, I think, at times that it is about working with an agency is different than applying to jobs online, and going directly to a company, because they may have a little bit more flexibility and open-mindedness to various candidates' experience. When they come to us, again, they're paying us, so they want somebody who's exact for the position.
Mm-hmm.
So candidates really need to keep that in mind as they approach a staffing agent.
So you have you have a hiring manager that has a job open.
Yep.
And staffing agencies will routinely call a person like that, or email them through LinkedIn, or contact them in some way. And one of the things we can share with candidates is they could be doing the same thing. If they had the temerity to pick up the phone and the communication skill to fire off a good voicemail or make a compelling argument to the person that they're talking to on the phone, they could be doing what we do and introducing themselves directly to hiring managers that have open positions.
That's the way to do it. Better than applying to jobs on various websites. If you just utilize your networking ability through LinkedIn, especially, and reach out to decision makers that are in your world, in companies that you want to work for, VPs, directors, those are the folks that you can get in front of. And it's pretty easy these days with technology.
And we're going to talk more about that and get into some more details with that. Rob, I want you to also address one of my pet peeves. I get very upset when I get resumes.
You have a lot of pet peeves.
I do. A lot of pet peeves. Oh, we could add them up.
We could.
I get upset when I get a resume that has no address. Okay. And they remind me of the resumes that come across the ocean from people that are in other countries where, again, they're not giving an address. And the reason they're not giving an address is because they're not in the country and they don't want you to know that. But when a person from Long Island, New York applies for a job at a Long Island, New York company and has no address on his resume, what sense does that make?
Zero.
Yeah.
And let me address that. Job seekers out there,
please.
Resumes are changing. They evolve every day. And formats change. And yes, there are certain things that are standard that never change. A name, an address, a phone number, an email address. Those are things that are standard that should never be off of a resume.
Mm-hmm.
Here in the United States, I'll also say that a picture does not belong on a resume.
Right.
That is an international phenomenon. I don't know why, but here in the United States, keep your picture off your resume.
So I think, Rob, I think some people are a little concerned maybe about putting their street address, because then somebody could rob them or make trouble. I don't know what the thinking or what the problem with that is, but I do understand it. I can understand why you don't need your street address. Just give me a city, a town, and a state that you live in, and that's good enough for me to know if you're in the proximity of why I should consider you for a candidate.
Agreed, because then otherwise it's just the unknown. But at least if there's a city there, we know where you're located.
Now, I even identified a couple of places that give workshops and seminars on how to write resumes.
Okay.
And they were advising the people, don't put your address on a resume. And I'm like, what? So right here on Radio Jobline, I had to stop what I was doing. I'm going, what? You know, you can't advise people not to put their address on if they're local. Now, Rob, let's say they're moving.
Well,
so now they're going after a job in Duluth, Minnesota.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you put your local Long Island address?
Oh.
I could see not. But what I would suggest to a job hunter, put down
Duluth, Minnesota.
Relocating to Duluth, Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Right in these where you'd normally have the address.
Agree.
Along with an email address and a phone number, and you're done. You know, so okay, at least we cleared that up.
101, resume 101.
Because it's just disturbing when I have to decide, should I call the candidate or not? I don't know where he lives. He might be in Connecticut. He might be anywhere and where it's not appropriate for this job.
Yeah, agreed.
So we took care of that. All right. The next thing is, who should use a staffing agency? Should everybody use staff? Is it for everyone, Rob? And also make the distinction between an employment agency and a staffing company.
Sure. Well, an employment agency and a staffing company can be perceived as the same, but really a staffing company, a lot of times you're talking about temporary jobs, you're talking about hourly, you know, pay and those types of positions. With a staffing company, you're really talking about more either retained search or senior level, executive level, management level type of roles.
Right.
That's important to know. When you are going in and seeking a staffing agency, you should try to find somebody that does specialize in whatever you do. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter what level you're at, doesn't matter what industry you're in, but the majority of the industry does have a niche area of focus, and it's important to find somebody who's in your world.
Let's do a quick sidebar, Rob. How would you do that? How would you find someone who's like specializes, like I do manufacturing and engineering?
Well,
so how would someone find me?
Sure. First place you probably want to go to is either Google or LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. In the criteria, the search criteria, you just want to put in recruiter, executive recruiter, headhunter, and whatever specialty area you're in, whether it's manufacturing, whether it's
as a keyword.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
And that's really the avenues that you can find somebody, and you'll within 10 seconds, you're going to find probably many recruiters that are in your world.
There also used to be a periodical, I don't know if it's still around, called APCNY, the Association of Personnel Consultants of New York.
Yes.
Where that has a listing of agencies that specialize by specialization.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to pay for it, though. It might not be free, but maybe if it's online, take a look and see if that's out there too, if you still need help.
Yeah, understood. I still think, though, in today's day and age, you just Google it and you're going to find the information you need.
Yeah, we should try that in the office and see if we come up.
We should.
If you Google like a sales recruiter or collections recruiter, do you come up?
How far and how many pages down the line do I come
that's
up?
That's right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Interesting.
Right.
Yeah, we'll have to do that.
We'll have everybody do it. Yeah. So, okay. So, not everybody can benefit from a staffing agency. In other words, it's not for somebody right out of school.
Correct. Okay. Well, that's
agency, maybe.
Yeah. It depends on the kind of jobs, because when I first got into this business, I placed a lot of entry-level administrative assistants, marketing coordinators with publishing companies and advertising companies. So I don't think that's necessarily the case, Scott. I think what you need to do is you need to make sure that you're going to the right people, that you're... Look, if you haven't been employed in 3 years, it's going to be really hard for you to find a job through a recruiter.
Mm-hmm.
Again, always keep in mind that they're looking for the exact candidate to fill a role. Mm-hmm. So they're getting paid to do that. Big bucks. And you need to fit that role, or the recruiter's probably not going to be able to spend much time with you. So if you find somebody who is direct in your world, maybe they will be able to spend the right time with you, direct you, you know, put you in the right direction. But if you just... If you don't have stability, if you're unrealistic about, you know, income expectations, you know, these are all key factors in whether or not a recruiter can really help you.
So you're saying some recruiters do take that recent college grad?
Without a doubt.
Okay.
Without a doubt, for sure.
Because most don't.
There are.
But some do. Some do.
They do. And you need to find them. Look for job postings from other recruiters, you know, in the type of industry that you're looking to be in as an entry-level job applicant.
Right. Okay.
And that's a good person. You know, when you see a job posting, go call that recruiter.
Okay. Now, we talk so much on this show about LinkedIn. I mean, it's almost like they should send us a check.
Yeah.
I do more promotion for LinkedIn than they do. I don't. You ever see a LinkedIn commercial? I've never seen.
It's become the world of the business person.
Absolutely. So tell everybody, instead of me saying it, Rob, tell everybody why everybody needs a LinkedIn profile.
You have it's more than a resume. You have to have a LinkedIn profile if you're looking for a job these days. The first place that I look after finding a resume is LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what are you currently doing? What does your profile look like? These are all key factors in somebody taking a resume and dialing that number or sending you an email. So Facebook, you know, these are places we go to immediately before we even decide, you know, these are decision makers. Are we going to call somebody or not?
Right.
And believe it or not, LinkedIn, Facebook, these weigh heavily on our decision making.
And also a lot of people still are not on LinkedIn. I can't believe it sometimes. And they'll say things to me like, What do I need it for?
Right.
Why do I need it? And then I would say to them, your career depends on it. If Rob is your recruiter, Rob is not going to just put a job on Indeed and wait for people to answer. That's not the way real recruiters operate. They go out and get you. We find the people. We shake the bushes and the trees until the people fall out of them. Okay. And if you don't have a LinkedIn profile, how am I going to find you?
Yes. I mean, you're right, Scott. And we know that. The other thing is it's a red flag to us. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a LinkedIn profile. Why?
Right.
There must be some reason why you're not looking to be on LinkedIn.
Yeah. So you have those resistant people. What I'm trying to say is there are resistant people. I go, oh, I don't need that.
I'm not into social media.
I'm not into social media. Right. I've heard that term.
Me too.
You know, and I said, no, it's not about social media. It's about job hunting.
That's right.
It's the job hunting tool. And if you're not in it, you're not on it, the recruiters can't find you and they can't cross-check you either. So let's say now you are looking, but you don't have a LinkedIn profile. So now you send me your resume. Well, what am I going to do? Knowing me, I'm going to look in LinkedIn.
And I'm going to say,
well, first of all, is that profile aligned with this resume that he sent me? I'll be able to see the picture. Not that that really matters, but you sort of make a connection, you know, when you see the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Dates of employment, companies, do they all match up? Does every thing make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not giving me the chance to do that, then I'm really not interested.
That's right. And Scott, no matter what job you're in today, there is technology involved, and you've got to be up to date with technology.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have a LinkedIn profile, that tells me that you are not up to date with technology,
right.
Which is a mark on you immediately.
Yeah, you might even have other technology issues.
That's right.
Maybe you're not just good with computers. You're just one of these people that freezes up with computers.
That's right.
So who wants that? I mean, what job in this world doesn't use a computer?
Every single one. Doesn't matter what you do. Bus driver.
We're sitting here on the radio. We're surrounded by computers.
That's right.
You know, and we're not even using them.
That's right. But they're here in front of us.
Right. They're always with us. So there are specializations. So like in my case, I do manufacturing and engineering. Rob does sales. He does collections. What else do you do, Rob?
That's pretty much my focus, sales and collections industry. Yes.
Okay. And then you go to a firm like ours that has 15 recruiters, and we've got finance and accounting.
IT.
IT, lots of IT, engineering.
Administrative.
Yeah. We even have a restoration specialist that works at restoration companies. So, every company is different. Every blend of recruiters is different. But you will find a good, once you find a good recruiter, they're very valuable. They can also give you advice, Rob. And I'm going to tell a quick story. I left the staffing business briefly in my career when a great recession hit us, and I went into marketing communications because I was on TV at the time, and I knew a lot of PR people, and it was easy for me. So I made that transition, but I was able to use what I had learned in recruiting and found that it fits everywhere.
Right.
You know, it's one of these things where if you can be a recruiter, I think you can do just about any job, you know. But the thing that is important is when the job market came roaring back, I went right back into the staffing business. But while I was out of it, I had to rely on agencies just like other people. So I had an interview at PSE&G.
Okay.
And I had a recruiter that dodged me. And I already been chosen for an interview, so I don't know why she was dodging me. But I'm a recruiter and was one all my whole life. So I was like, I was trying to find out what's going on in her mind. Why is she not returning my call? So on and so on. Eventually, she returns my call about 3 days before the interview. And I'm expecting my big prep call now.
Right?
Because we do these prep calls. And she sends me a link to the homepage of the PSEG website. That was the prep. She says, take a look at this website and make sure you're prepared. That was all the prep. I spend 30 minutes to 40 minutes preparing the candidate for a job.
Well, and that's what we're here for, to consult with the candidate, help them as best as we can find the job. I guarantee you that recruiter is not a top producer.
Yeah.
For that reason alone.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not taking the time to really work with the candidates that they have and give them the best opportunity. So I have a very similar story, as a matter of fact, where I also left the business after 9/11 for almost 2 years, and I was away. And I get a call from a recruiter telling me about this great opportunity with an amazing company, but the VP of sales was going to be in New York City, and I had to interview the next day with him, or I would not have no opportunity, you know, with the company. So I packed my bags, I drove home 2 hours from where I was at 2 a.m,
mm-hmm.
and I get home and I look at the website, and everything that this recruiter told me about the company was a lie. And I was furious.
Well, what was the motivation to lie, though?
Because he just wanted to get people in front of this decision maker. Obviously, he was coming in. It was probably last minute.
Right.
And he wanted to do whatever he could to get good candidates in front of this. So he lied to me about what the company did. I'd never heard of them.
Mm-hmm.
This was in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have a phone with internet access on it. So I couldn't go and look at the company from where I was. I just took his word for it.
Right.
And it was all a lie.
Wow.
And needless to say, I didn't go in the interview, but what a waste of everybody's time. I mean, his own, his clients. So every recruiter is not great, and you need to vet them out. But I will tell you, as a candidate, your recruiter should be spending time with you to help you prepare for the interview and be thorough about it and really give you good advice. And you should be able to ask them questions that they can answer, because that's part of our job.
Right.
Not just placing people.
Rob, they should be sharing with you what they have learned in all of their years of staffing about what to say on a job interview, how to answer such and such question, how to prepare, how to do the research.
How to dress.
You know, most of us, unless we're recruiters or staffing people, don't know those answers. You know, so that's what the recruiter's supposed to do. And when they don't do it, it's a little frustrating. You're listening to Radio Jobline with Scott Possessor. We're here live, finally. Not sick. We're better. We're here. No traffic jams. If you're listening to the show today, you're listening to a show about staffing and recruiting. We got a news break coming up. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Roll away.
And now, welcome back to Radio Jobline with your host, Scott Possessor, right here on LI News Radio.
You know, I have to wait a little bit. I don't want to deprive you of your 15 seconds of Grateful Dead, those of you that love the music out there. So we're back talking about staffing. We have with us a terrific guest, a fantastic guy, and a good friend of mine, Rob Shamowitz, who is a recruiter, has been in staffing for how many years?
22 years.
22 years. And
23, my goodness.
23,
wow.
My goodness. And he's still a young man. Still
started
a relatively
early.
Young man. Started early. Unlike me, the old man in the sea. But Rob is great at what he does. And Rob, today I think I'd like to focus in this segment more about how to job hunt staffing style. Mm-hmm. You know, with that prep call that the staffing agency gives you, all the advice that you get, and let's share it with the listeners. Okay. I mean, I tell people, we'll go shot for shot. I tell people research. You ever hear of real estate, location, location, location?
Yeah, of course.
When it comes to job hunting, preparation, preparation, preparation. I say it three times. And I go on and on about how people buy houses and spend 200 hours buying a house. And they'll prepare 10 minutes for a job interview. When over a six-year period, everyone in America earns more from their job than the total value of their home plus equity.
Mm-hmm.
So so it really doesn't make sense that you put 200 hours into buying the right house and 15 minutes into finding a job.
Where are your priorities?
Exactly. So Rob, how much time should people prepare? How much preparation is really advisable?
Well, I think, you know, it depends on the individual, but we're talking at least a couple hours, folks. And this is not, you know, fly by night and really just head out in the morning and go on the interview. I mean, it starts with really knowing what the job description is and what a client's looking for, what a company's looking for in this position. So we're going to look at the company website. I mean, that's got to be the first place that you go. You better know, you know, a lot of things about that company.
History mission.
Exactly. Their mission, you know, where their focus is, some of their clients, maybe the industries.
Announcements.
All those things, press releases, right? Because I guarantee that 99% of you out there, you will be asked certain questions on your interview that pertain to what do you know about us?
Right.
And if you can't answer, you're not going to be hired.
Right.
So let's start there. Okay?
Sometimes companies don't even know to ask that. But it's incumbent on the candidate to say it.
Be proactive, absolutely.
You know, so even if no one says, what do you know about the company? Make sure you seize the mic.
That's
and say, look, I studied this, I read about this, I understand this, I understand this is the computer system you use, this is the technology that you're all about. You know, the more you tell a company, the more they feel comfortable with you. And it's just like in the world of friendship or mating, okay? If someone doesn't like you, you have no choice. You have no chance, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to go on a job interview and you want to create that feeling of, I want this guy to like me. How do you do that, Rob?
Well, you got to engage yourself, right? And you got to show that you're knowledgeable and that you're somebody who who can fit in well with your boss, with the group, with the person you're interviewing with. Because if you don't fit into that culture, you're not likable, they're not going to hire you no matter how great you are.
Yeah, I try to tell people to kind of read the person that's interviewing them.
Know your audience.
And know your audience. Now, there's something I do in all my little workshops that I give with this style of communication. Sometimes if you know a person's communication style, then you can deliver your own communication in the same style, and then they kind of think you're one and the same. So this is that old visual, auditory, kinesthetic. We've talked about this, I think you and I. If a person's visual, paint them a picture. To show them what it's going to look like to have you work there. If they're auditory, what's it going to sound like to have you? And if they're kinesthetic, what's it going to feel like to have you work there? So I like to use the real estate example. So if you are selling a home to a visual guy, you know, you might say, well, imagine how this house will look in the wintertime with the snow falling gently on the roof. Okay. But I wouldn't say that to an auditory guy. I would say, in this house, you won't hear any sirens.
Sure.
But you'll just hear the gentle chirping of birds, right? If he's an auditory. And then to a kinesthetic guy, I would say, how would it feel driving up that driveway and looking at those majestic, beautiful doors? Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. So you customize your communication according to the style of the person that is interviewing you. Now, this can be a very complicated, mysterious thing, but it's really not, because people reveal their style immediately. If I say to you, tell me what you remember about the moment 9/11 happened, what would you say?
Fear.
Okay, so what is fear? Fear is an emotion.
Right.
Okay. Now I saw the same thing you did. I saw the same 9/11 you did.
Right.
Okay. And the first thing that I had was I watched it. I watched it on CNN. I must have watched it 200 times. The over and over again.
You're a visual guy.
Buildings go down, yeah. And I'm a visual guy. Mm-hmm. Did I hear it on the radio? Yes. On the way into work that day, I heard it on the radio before I got to work. But what did I choose to tell you? I choose to tell you what I watched.
That's right.
So I'm revealing my style immediately. You can listen to the verbs that a person uses and right away know their style. So now you've got a visual guy. And another way you can tell a visual guy, they're very proper. Their lapels are perfectly pressed. They don't have a little dot of dirt on their tie. Their shoes are completely polished. There isn't a stain on their light switch. You know, everything is clean because they're very stimulated by what they see. I once went into a guy's office and he had stacks of papers all around the perimeter of his office on the floor, about 2 feet high. So every foot or so was another 2 foot high pile of papers. So I walked into the office. And I think I said something stupid like, I assume you know where everything is. And he goes, of course. You know,
yeah, sure.
And he was actually showing me what's in what pile and what's like 10 pages down. He was amazing. But he was not stimulated by what you see. He was stimulated by what he heard and what he felt.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So what I think is a little secret weapon is when the person's interviewing you, customize your communication according to their style. What do you think of this?
I agree wholeheartedly. And that comes from, it's an old sales tactic, folks. You know, really just kind of mirroring yourself to whoever's on the other end of the phone, whoever's in front of you. When you're interviewing, you're selling yourself. It's sales, no matter what job you're interviewing for. So exactly, Scott, you really should try and you want to be yourself, but you want to also try to mirror the person that's in front of you. I would want to mention, Scott, in addition to doing the research on the company and getting back to some of those tactics, you should also research the person that you're interviewing with. Go on to LinkedIn and take a look at their profile and their history so that you can reference to that when you're talking to them again. They're going to see you've done your research. You know about me. You know about my background, and it just shows that you're diligent about what you do.
A great point. We interviewed a guy this week for a recruiter job, and he sat down with me, and within 30 seconds, he says, "I know you went to Oneonta," right? Because he went to Oneonta, and I'm like, "Oh my God, I love this guy!"
Right?
I mean, we suffered through the cold of Oneonta, through the pain of Oneonta, through the beauty of Oneonta. And there was many great things about the school, but it was one of the coldest places I've ever been. And anybody that has ever gone to Oneonta can deal with cold weather. We were up on a mountain, and so immediately I felt a kinship with this person because we went to that same school. And think about how much that helped him.
Incredible.
Yep. Right?
It really provided so much benefit to the whole interview process for him. You immediately liked him as soon as he walked in the door.
I was also impressed that he bothered to look.
That's right.
Right? Because not everyone does. And everybody could be doing it. but they don't, Rob. So that was a great tip. Look at your opponent. Look at your adversary. Look at your interviewer. Where is he from? What company did he work at before? Maybe you guys worked at the same company. Some years ago. I mean, you're in the same industry. It's entirely possible. Maybe you know some same people. Look at his LinkedIn account. Maybe you can connect with him, and maybe he can look and see his connections.
Yes.
And say, well, we're both connected to Rob Shamowitz.
That's right.
You know, and so there's so many things you can do to investigate the person who's going to interview. So it's not just the company. It's the person.
Without a doubt. A must. An absolute must. Let's move on.
Yeah.
So also, I would say, you know, dressing for an interview today is a little tricky.
Mm-hmm.
5 years ago, maybe 7 years ago, I would have told anybody, wear a suit and a tie.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go wrong. Even if, you know, it's not required for the job, you want to wear that in an interview. In today's day and age, not so much all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I would say probably the majority of the time for the first interview, but there are plenty of companies that are in technology that are, you know, dot-coms mm-hmm. and where, you know, millennial-type companies where you're going to go in jeans and a T-shirt every day. If you know that about the company, you probably just want to wear slacks and a button-down shirt for the interview. I think that's pretty standard.
Mm-hmm.
Probably do away with the suit and tie.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to advise someone not to wear a suit and tie unless you know for a fact that if they walk in there with a suit and tie, it's going to look funny. I have a friend that on the talent acquisition side works for my big company, and he when a candidate wears a black suit,
yeah,
he goes, he's dressed for a funeral,
well,
and he says it every time.
Yeah.
I don't think a black suit, except if you're in banking and you have some sort of a black pinstriped suit, that I could see it. But other than that, stay away from black.
Navy blue is you just can't go wrong.
And your second interview, dark gray.
Yeah. I think that's pretty standard.
There you go.
That's standard for years.
And with women, we can't speak for women because we don't have a woman here to represent that sex. But it's also hinky with you. You got to watch the baubles and the chains and the tattoos. You don't want any tattoos. You can't wear too much perfume. Yeah. I mean,
don't wear any perfume.
Don't wear any perfume. You know, there's a lot of mistakes you can make in both sexes. You know, this is a tricky business. This whole interviewing thing.
It is.
You don't want to be dressed even so much better than the guy that's interviewing
right.
you. Because then it's sort of an awkward feeling, you know, so you got to dress just right, a little bit sharper than your person who's going to interview you, but not so much sharper that he feels like, oh, my God, I'm
inferior.
Not,
right. Yeah.
Inferior.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Right. So that's the other thing. Now, Rob, I also wanted to hit you with another one. This is something that comes up a lot with my people. I don't know, tell me how you deal with this.
Sure.
There are people that are afraid to intimidate the interviewer. Because they're going to go after their job. So I've heard this before, you know, where people say, well, you know, I actually, some of these, you know, kids are 25 years old. You know, I'm 50. I've been doing this for 30 years, you know, but then I have to calm them down, you know, and say, but you don't, that doesn't show in the interview under any circumstances. You know, you have to be respectful at all times, no matter how much more experience you have than the other person.
A lot of job hunters think that it's a great thing to say, I want to grow and I want growth. And, you know, the question on an interview is, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And you say, oh, I'm going to be the CEO of the company.
Mm-hmm.
These are not great things because mm-hmm. they want to know, first of all, that you're interested in the job that you're interviewing for today,
because mm-hmm.
that's what they're looking to hire for today.
Right.
And besides that, you know, moving forward, growth is circumstantial. There's got to be a position open for you to grow into. You've
right.
got to be successful at the current role that you're in order to even be considered
right.
to grow. So you really want to stay away from growth unless, you know, the person interviewing you brings it up. And even then, you want to kind of curtail it back a little bit and just sort of say, I'm looking to grow at the pace that the company's looking to, you know, grow me at. I'm very interested in ABC job, the job that I'm interviewing for today.
So let's ask for the Shamowitz answer to the
yes.
question. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? Give me a good answer.
I see myself learning and being much more knowledgeable about my role and the company. Hopefully, I will have the opportunity to grow, but I do understand that that is circumstantial. I expect to be successful in my role because I've been successful my entire career.
Mm-hmm.
With that, you know, hopefully it'll take me into another role. But, you know, right now, I look forward to being a part of the organization. Just keep it kind of light.
Yeah.
Again, you don't want to be too aggressive with that answer. So
right.
I think that's a good way to approach it is learning and growing with the company, knowing more about the company, helping the company grow, and letting it kind of lay where it may.
My PSEG interview?
Yeah.
They asked me that.
And your answer?
Where do I see myself?
Yeah.
So what I came back with, because I've always worried about this question, and I'm actually pretty prepared for it.
Okay.
So what I say is I would like to think in 5 years I would have mastered every element of this job, every aspect of the company, absorbed every piece of the company's culture, learned its history and its mission, and been able to make a contribution at a higher level. If a managerial position were to be offered to someone, I would like to be considered for it based on my performance.
Wow, that's a great answer, Scott.
There you go.
That's as perfect as it gets.
That's why they pay me the big bucks.
Yeah, I see.
I mean,
that.
I could just.
You articulated that perfectly. Yeah.
So, but if you come up with something like that, you know, it's so bulletproof. And that's the thing I also that we're trying to share with the listener. Every question has an answer, Rob. It's only a finite number of questions that you will be asked. Of course, about your specialty, and that's a whole different story. We can't make them better at what they do, but we can make them better job hunters. And for every question out there, what is your weakness?
Sometimes I get too wrapped up in my job, and it really affects, you know, where I am personally, because you know, sometimes I'm just so focused on what I do, and it is a weakness because I need to step away sometimes and just kind of take a deep breath. And I work very hard. I think that's a great weakness to have. It's a positive,
right? It's a positive, and but it's another tough one, because so I've had actually candidates give me a weakness. I mean, honest to God, I'm a terrible speller,
right?
Like that. Or you know, you never give a weakness.
Right.
So my answer to that one is, you know, I've been in a job market for many, many years, and I'd like to think that if I did have a weakness, it isn't glaring anymore. But what I do is I engineer my emails. Sometimes I spend a little bit too much time on my emails.
I do too.
I'm concerned about the font. I'm concerned about the look. I'm concerned about the spacing. I'm concerned, of course, about the grammar and spelling. And I wind up spending more time on that email than I should have. But I think my employers have found it to be more of a positive than a negative.
You're probably right. I actually fall into the same
trap. That's my answer.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That was my answer.
Okay, so, but that is a negative of mine at times.
Right. But no, it's mine too. It's a negative of mine. So you always use a little piece of the truth.
Absolutely.
Right.
You always want to make that negative into a positive.
Right. And listeners, if you didn't get that, that's what we're doing. We're turning negatives into positives.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, now they say, how much money are you looking for?
Well, I've been earning. I would probably bring up, even I know today there's laws that, you know, companies can't ask you what you're currently earning, but I'd probably tell them what I'm currently earning and almost leave it somewhat negotiable, because you don't want to paint yourself into a corner. And, you know, a job, you tell somebody you're looking for 180 when you'd really take 170, but the budget is only up to 170.
Right.
You're out. You want to leave it somewhat flexible so that you have the opportunity to have the ball in your court and make a decision rather than not get an offer at all.
Right. I think you're right on with telling a person what you make, because you probably fill that out on an application anyway. You know, usually when you go on a job interview, you fill out an application. So that's probably public knowledge already.
That's true.
You know, what you're earning. But you definitely want to make it that you have not made up your mind yet. So therefore, you're not really ready to discuss salary. You know, you have a lot more things you need to think about and get answered before you can even start thinking about compensation. You know, but what happened was different is I brought it up, Rob. I said to you, what are you looking for?
Well,
I tell candidates, never bring up this. Do you have any questions, Rob? Yeah,
sure.
What does the job pay?
No.
I mean, forget it.
No.
You're done.
Well, that's two topics I'm going to just talk about real quick. So, yes, I mean, don't ever ask about benefits or compensation, especially on a first interview. Mm-hmm. Maybe once you have an offer or you get to a point where you kind of see that it's coming. But you want the perception to be that you're interested in the role because it's a good fit for you, and it's a good fit for what you're looking for from a career standpoint. Mm-hmm. Once you give that away and you start talking about, you know, you're only interested in money and benefits, well, then you're probably going to be out for the role. Mm-hmm. The other topic you just brought up, I lost my train of thought, Scott. I'm sorry.
It's okay. Having related to the same thing?
It was related to compensation, but then you went on something else.
Benefits? Well, was it benefits?
No, just a matter of, bottom line is, don't bring it up yourself. You know, obviously, again, if the person interviewing you asks you that question, well, you got to answer it.
Right.
Questions. That was what you discussed.
Right.
You want to have questions on your interview. If the person interviewing you asks, what questions do you have? And you say, oh, I have none. That doesn't show much thought process. So you want to come into an interview prepared to ask, you know, a list of five questions. But even if those questions get asked over the course of conversation throughout that interview, you better come up with three or four others real quick, because you have to have questions.
Now, here's what I'm going to add one little caveat to that.
Please.
What I tell my candidates is go in there with a couple of questions, but give me a question. Give the interviewer a question that came up as a result of something you learned during the interview. Now, what that does is it demonstrates intelligence. So if you can isolate a thought, keep it in your brain, let it sit while we're continuing to talk, come back to it, and extract an idea from it, then ask a question all on the fly, to me, you're demonstrating intelligence.
Oh, without a doubt. And being able to think on the fly and showing your sharpness. And
right.
Yes, it's very important to be able to do that. And it's also important to be able to do that in a thank you letter. Mm-hmm. Reference discussion that you had throughout the interview. Mm-hmm. Again, it shows the same exact intelligence level.
Do you need to send a thank you note every time?
Yes. Every person that you interview with, I would send a separate one. It does not need to be 2 pages long. It's fairly short and sweet. But again, you want to reference why you're right for the role based on conversation that you had, based on what you know about the job. And
have somebody edit it for you.
Every time.
Because, man, you can screw yourself up if you say something grammatically incorrect.
And we see this happen all the time.
All the time. So get an editor. Get an editor. Rob, tell people how they can reach you.
Well, you can find me certainly on LinkedIn, obviously.
Spell your last name.
C-H-A-I-M-O-W-I-T-Z. And I work for Executive Alliance and COMAC.
Give your email address.
It's rob@execs.com.
All right. Now, if you're looking for a sales job or a collection job, Rob is the guy to call. But also, if you have questions and you want to speak to Rob privately, send him an email. He'll answer.
And please remember, this is on a national level. This is not just local here in New York.
Right. Any kind of job you're looking for, Rob can help you. All right. So listen, we're almost out of time. Rob, thank you so much for being here and also for putting up with that horrible traffic jam a few days ago, which nearly destroyed my radio career. But I'm bouncing back.
You recovered nicely.
We're going to be back with you next week. We have Joe Campolo coming on the show to talk about bleeding for success, all about being successful. Tune in next week. We're going to see you soon. Stay with Radio Jobline. See you next week.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.